Hello, Biscuit Babies. It's me, William Bartram, and it's time for The Biscuit. Today, we have Sam Jardine, current Toronto Marley and former Ohio State Buckeye. Before we get into the episode, I just have a few things I'd like to mention. If you are on the internet today listening to this episode, it is Cyber Monday, so be sure to go over to hairlessapeinc.com and use the promo code CYBER20. Save yourself 20% off anything over there. If you're going any other day other than Cyber Monday, use Biscuit10 as your promo code and save yourself 10%. So I'd recommend if you're listening today, Monday, November 26th, that you head over there right away and get yourself some Christmas presents. Best shirts ever. Hairless Ape Inc. Hairless Ape Conspiracies. Lucid Float Spas, Mount Vernon, Ohio. Get your ass over there. Tell them The Biscuit sent you. Save half off your first float. That is a savings of over $30. I think it works on gift cards, too. I know people are going to be getting ready to act like they're getting in shape in January, so maybe start getting some gift cards for your family and friends, or maybe yourself. Maybe con yourself into thinking you're going to stop being a slob. And last but not least, ParkersPlatoon.org. Scott Parker, Stanley Cup champion, his wife and their child, well, he's not a kid anymore, but DJ, are dedicated to helping one veteran at a time. Go over to ParkersPlatoon.org and see how you can help today. They also work with Body Check Wellness and their CBD products. Scott Parker and Riley Cote, both former guests of The Biscuit, are over there dealing out God's juice, CBD. Use it, love it, get into it. Before we get into the episode with Sam Jardine, I just wanted to mention that I wanted to have him on today because a former Belvillian, Preston Boyd, had mentioned getting him on, and I thought it was a good idea, you know, to kind of follow the path of somebody making their way into the NHL. So enjoy.
Now Probert got the right hand. He's loose with the right hand, and he starts to retaliate. And down goes Nyland, and the two of them are hammering each other.
Knights of Columbus, that hurts.
It's old time hockey, the way you're supposed to play. You throw a little lumber if a guy gets in your way. You play like Gordie Howe or Eddie fucking Shore. We can't all be Gretzky, the loser Bobby Orr's. Hey.
The enforcer of all hockey podcasts. It's The Biscuit. It's The Biscuit.
Damn it! Their goal regulation size are what?
The enforcer of all hockey podcasts.
God help the fucking day if fighting's ever banned. As a country, we'll stop working on some Batman's fucking can.
Hi, everybody. It's The Biscuit Podcast.
Hey, you want to go?
Yeah, okay. Good luck, man. Good luck to you too, buddy.
All right, Biscuit Babies, as promised, I'm joined today by current Toronto Marley, Sam Jardine. How you doing?
Hey, Willie. Yeah, I'm doing all right. Thanks for having me on.
Absolutely. Now, you've had a little bit of an afternoon there trying to get the car fixed and get on the podcast, yeah?
Yeah, one of my teammates told me to go to his brother-in-law's car shop. And, you know, he's telling me that I would get hooked up with a good deal, and I was, you know, I was going to bring him a stick, maybe. Ended up giving the guy a stick and got rinsed for a $145 bill. So I'm going to have to give it to my buddy tomorrow because this was not what I was expecting this afternoon. But.
For sure, man. Just another day in the life of being in the AHL, I suppose.
A little bit. I mean, getting to live in a nice city like Toronto is certainly a luxury, especially considering some of the buddies that I have in the league and some of the cities that they're living in. I don't take it for granted being able to live in such a nice city like Toronto.
Oh, for sure. I was thinking about that the other day. The wife and I went to the Flint Firebirds game, and I'm looking over at all these Canadian kids that are, you know, 17 years old, living away from home for the first time. I'm like, oh man, these kids got sent to Flint, Michigan for their first time, like living out of their mom's house. I was like, these kids are probably crying at night.
Yeah, it can go both ways. Like, some guys can't handle the distraction of a big city, and then other guys, they kind of thrive in that, in the small towns, and
yeah,
and they just, you know, they love their teammates so much, and kind of like, from my experience, the smaller the city, the more that you're like hanging out with your buddies, and it feels more of like a family atmosphere. Sometimes when you're in the big city, there's so much going on that guys are off in different directions, and kind of the only time you ever see them is in the locker room, which is fine, and it's got a very professional feel to it. But I put on a couple championship teams, and you know, the one thing that's so important is making sure you guys are feeling like a family in that locker room, spending time away from the rink and stuff like that. So
for sure,
yeah.
Now, where you're from in Lacombe, Alberta, is that a larger city or is that a smaller town kind of feel? How did you grow up? You know, when you were getting into hockey there.
Oh, it's a small town. It's 10,000 people. But the thing is, there's just a fantastic minor hockey organization that I got to grow up in, and I was lucky enough to be coached by my dad on a few of those teams. And if it wasn't my dad, it was like one of my teammates' dads. And we were always playing just like for the love of the game, and my very best friends are still the guys that I played with back in Adams, Pee-wees, and even Dynamite Father. Those are truly like the most genuine, happy hockey days of my life. And I grew up in the Lacombe minor hockey system, big rivalries with other small town Alberta teams, and eventually had to make the jump to Red Deer, which is a bigger city, and they had AAA program. And then that's when, you know, hockey became quite a bit more serious for me.
Right. Now, is Red Deer, are you living at home still, or are you in the billet system at that point?
No, Red Deer is only about 25 minutes away. So I played up until Pee-wee's, and Pee-wee's is, I think he goes till 13 years old. And then when I started playing AAA, it was just doing a little bit more driving, but it was still fine. I was still going to Lacombe High School and had all my friends there. It wasn't until junior A hockey when I turned 17 that I moved away from home and started billeting in Camrose, Alberta, another small town, Alberta. Yeah. So.
And there, that was kind of a cool situation. You got to play with your brother, Clayton, at Camrose. So that probably made that transition a little bit better easier at a point.
Yeah, it certainly was. And actually, we lived together in billet houses, and he was the captain of the team that year. And we had an awesome squad. It was my rookie year, but we had like 8 20-year-olds on the team, and like 3 of the toughest guys in the league, probably the toughest guy in the league. He had just been a fighter in the Western Hockey League for 4 years.
Who's that?
And Jordan Hale was okay. His name. And so actually Jordan, we called him Dinger. And Jordan was a year older than my brother. He's from Lacombe. And so I always grew up like looking up towards Jordan. He one of those guys that went on, you know, there's not a lot of kids from Lacombe that go on to play a high level of hockey. And he went on to play for the Brandon Wheat team. So I always really looked up to him, and he did it the hard way. He was fighting all the time. He's a big boy. So he's the heavyweight class. And then, when I got to Camrose, my coach, Boris, he put, Jordan and I together as a D pairing. So my rookie year, I could do whatever I wanted. Yeah,
them Western dudes can bang, man.
Oh, it's crazy. I mean, there's not a lot of guys that do things the way that Jordan had to do them. And I'm sure I heard on the podcast, it's a dying breed a little bit, but I'll never forget that Jordan. And Jordan was the first of many of my teammates that I've always loved and appreciated, because I knew they always had my back. Just unbelievable guys.
Yeah, those guys, I mean, it's a common theme that they're always, you know, one of the favorite guys in the room between teammates. They're always, you know, whether it be the protecting of the guys or just they seem to be the funniest or just the nicest dudes, they they always get a good rep from all the boys in the room.
Totally. Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, they're always the most genuine, you know?
Yeah.
And no matter what's going on and throughout the course of a hockey season, we all got our struggles and our issues. And, I mean, you've heard it 100 times before about the tough guys that, you know, they've the biggest hearts and teddy bears, but they oftentimes will be guys that will, like, wear their struggles on their sleeve, too.
Yeah.
Like, they're not... They're a tough guy, but they're not trying to hide the fact that, like, they deal with shit too. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I've always really appreciated that, not just in teammates, but in people in general. It's like, if I ask you how you're doing and you tell me the same thing every single time, yeah, I'm good. Yeah, I'm good. Like, well, sometimes you're not doing that great. And when I ask you how you're doing, you know, it's okay to tell me, like, yeah, shit day.
Yeah, yeah.
So I've always found that, like, the top guys on the team, they'll tell you, like, oh, geez, man, today's a battle. I'm just trying to get through today. So,
Always found, you know, the number of guys I've had on that, you know, were enforcers, their honesty and their fearlessness is something to be admired, that's for sure. That was really captured really well, I thought, in Ice Guardians. Just the side of those guys where I think they can't even help it. They're just honest. There's nothing else for them to do but to be honest and pour it all out. They've, you know, made a living off of fighting guys. So it's like, you know, what else is going to happen?
Yeah, totally. Yeah, and they kind of have faith and trust kind of in, like, their hockey community.
Right.
And, you know, they're always known as the glue guys in a locker room and the glue guys, you know, of the team. And this is something that, you know, just for hockey as a sport in general, I mean, they're kind of like sometimes the glue of just hockey culture.
Yeah, for sure.
And you know, I say that in, like, the best way possible. I know sometimes you can stigmatize hockey culture and talk about the bad parts of it, but I'm talking about the good stuff,
right?
Like, you know, standing up for what is right and stuff, and you know, we can't lose that. So
no, and I'm glad you said that. I mean, because it is, like you had mentioned before, it is dying out. It's inevitable, but I mean, as long as there's still guys in the league saying we can't lose it, then there's still that glimpse of hope that it'll continue on. And I think even maybe, I mean, you dropped him a few times there in the AGHL. Were your tilts more of a, not just be, like, because you didn't have a bunch of tilts in that junior years, but I mean, you did it. Was that just something that overcame you and it was like, okay, it's time to go? Or was it something that built on through the games and then, you know, it was just kind of came on that way?
Yeah. I mean, it's a little bit of both. Like, I'm certainly not going to sit on here and say that I'm an enforcer or anything like that, but I've certainly showed up.
For sure, man.
Quite a few fights, yeah, at, you know, junior level and then on to pro as well. And I've fought some big boys. And it's always a combination of, you know, heat of the moment and also quite calculated, like trying to survey the, you know, the feel of the game and maybe, like, the message that the coach is sending and stuff like that. Like, I've never, ever been afraid to do it. And, I mean, certainly I think if you look at some of the size of the guys that I fought, then that certainly speaks for itself. But, yeah, I mean, I didn't want to, the thing is, like, if you carve yourself out to be that guy, it'll open up the door for you to obviously have that role as an enforcer, but sometimes it closes the door to, you know, getting on the power play.
Yeah.
And being that top four D man, you're just, like, stuck in the six hole because all they think of you is a fighter. So I kind of, I might have overdid it my first year of pro. I came in just swinging and I found that, sure, I had earned the respect of my teammates as, like, somebody who is a little bit fearless that way, but I didn't have the respect of some of my, you know, coaches and teammates and executives that I could actually play the game.
So it kind of pigeonholed you a little bit.
You know, for that reason, I just switched my priorities a little bit more to seeing that the game was trending towards really needing to be skilled and make plays and consistently reliable with the puck and skating. And I just poured a lot of time and energy into that. And I think, honestly, if I wouldn't have, I'd probably be just be clubbing it out in the East Coast League, racking up 200 penalty minutes a year. I didn't like make that realization. So,
well, I mean, that's wise on you. You know, for your you know, longevity in the sport as a professional hockey player. Because, I mean, you're going to have to be cerebral and figure out those things. Or like you said, you're going to get to a certain point and that's going to be it, because there's not that place now, you know, where you're trying to get to where you could just do that. And there'd be no reason for you to do that anyhow, because you can score as a defenseman. You can move the puck very well. Now, what point did you make it to where, whether it be in the Alberta League there or before you got drafted, were you like, okay, I've gone on pure skill alone, but now it's time to put in that off season and really take it to that next level? Or like you said, when you were in the East Coast League your first year, just kind of fighting guys, when did it get to the point where like, okay, you know, I gotta work on my skate? Because I would imagine you're just a lot better than most guys for a certain point, and then it kind of hits like, okay, who's going to work harder?
Yeah. Well, you know what? There's two situations that are popping into my brain real quick here. The first was I was only 14 years old, and I just finished my Bantam AAA season, and I had big hopes for myself to maybe get drafted into the Western Hockey League,
mm-hmm.
and it didn't happen. And I was the only kid from Macomb that had any real shot at getting drafted. And there has been a kid from Macomb drafted into the WHL, I think, for like 12 years in a row. And, I mean, it sounds so stupid talking about it now, but at the time, I was, like, devastated that I, like, let down the whole town of Macomb. And I know nobody cares, but that was the feeling I had. And, I just focused and dialed in, like, at the young age of 14. I was like, well, I don't want to feel like this ever again.
Yeah, man.
And I just felt like I was so far away from my true potential. Even at the age of 14, I was like the gut feeling I had. Like, you could be so much better than this. So I put in the work that summer, and, you know, the season following, I won 15-year-old league defenseman of the year, and I saw what could happen when, like, you focus and you work hard, but you also work smart, and I kind of rode that momentum for a few years, and then the same sort of thing happened to me heading into my first year of pro. I just really wasn't satisfied with my game. I was really frustrated with how my college career went, and I just couldn't figure it out. You know, there's a lot of different reasons why, some of which had nothing to do with ice hockey. But that's the summer between my third year of college, and then I signed with the Rockford IceHogs in the Chicago organization. I moved to Chicago and started working with the Chicago Blackhawks skills and conditioning coach, and then also their on-ice skills coach. And same thing, just wanted to start working a little smarter and focus. And you know, it paid off in the moment there. I didn't get the results immediately, but, you know, I've always just trusted that if you got a plan, you stick to it, you always, you know, assess the situation and take a look around, learn from other people, implement that into your blueprint to get better. You know, eventually you're just going to slowly crawl to where to where you got to go. There's so many guys that want to play pro hockey. It's so competitive. You got to carve out a way to get yourself ahead. So,
amen, man. I mean, and you're doing it, dude. You're a professional hockey player. That's my hat's off to you. I mean, that's amazing to have that wherewithal. And it always blows my mind that these 14-year-old kids, I mean, even yourself, going, I have a shot at doing this. It's buckle down time. I mean, at 14, I was not doing that, man. That's for sure. You know?
Yeah. It's funny to look back on. I mean, it's weird that it was such a conscious decision back then. And
yeah,
the thing is, I don't even know if I would suggest to kids like thinking like that. I would just tell them to have fun and like really enjoy it.
For sure.
I put maybe a little bit too much stress on myself, but I mean, with that being said, it just is what it is.
Yeah.
Got me to where I am today.
For sure. I mean, I saw an article the other day on a 13-year-old kid in Canada who's supposed to be the next Sidney Crosby and Connor McDavid. I'm just thinking in my head, like, why don't you just let him be 14 and 15 first? And, you know, there's no reason to put that pressure on that kid. Just let him, like, maybe try baseball for a little bit. Like, if he's that good at hockey, it's gonna figure it itself out.
I mean, it's wild. I spent some time with it was the U-12 Chicago AAA team. I've always tried to like get involved with youth teams, whatever city I'm in, and I've spent a little time with I think it's the U-10s here in Toronto. I've been out practicing with them a couple of times, and man, it is the narrative everywhere you go is like, if you take a day off, you're cheating your chances of being a pro hockey player.
Tonight. Yeah, man.
Holy smokes.
Yeah, it's crazy. I remember making that same decision as you did, but the other way. I remember being a junior in high school, having offers to go play football at, you know, big Division I schools, and having coaches telling me I got to gain weight, I have to eat cottage cheese in between classes and all this jazz. And I just thought to myself, I'm not even going to play my senior year because I'm not going to college. I don't want to do it. I'm not going to waste anybody's time. I was like, the amount of what they were wanting me to do, I knew I wasn't prepared and I didn't have that in me. As you know, as pathetic as it might sound, I knew it. I was like, man, there's no way. There's no way I can do this. And I didn't want to do it, which is fine. I mean, I ended up touring and playing music for over a decade. And, you know, I'm in a podcast now talking to dudes like Sam Jardine. So it all worked out. But that it's weird to have that decision in my head, like, oh, is this what I'm – am I going to go left or am I going to go right?
Yeah. I mean, I totally respect that. In fact, my little sister, she just got engaged to a guy that I grew up working out with. And he was an unbelievable hockey player. He actually captained the Midget AAA Red Deer team to a national championship in back in Alberta. And, you know, he had Division I offers. He just, like, him and I were not so different. He had Division I offers after playing for the Camrose Kodiaks. And he was just like, you know what, man? I got my grandpa is kind of slowing down. I want to help him farm. I'm going to take over the farm. And this life's just maybe not for me.
Yeah.
And like, so me and him, I mean, we would work out together all the time. So, it wasn't, you know, it's not, I never once was like, dude, you got to do this. You got to take that Div 1 scholarship. And, you know, a few years later, the asshole is marrying my little sister. So, you know, like, probably the best thing that ever could have happened to my sister.
Yeah,
you know? it's just the way life goes.
Yeah, it's tough to make those decisions as a kid, but I not for once do I look back on it and go, man, I really should have went and played 4 years at college football, destroyed my brain a little bit more, and not made the NFL. Like, I mean, there was no shot of it. So I knew that, and I was like, I mean, I can go to school for free, but I didn't want to go to school. So it was like, it seemed like a no-brainer, really.
Yeah.
Now, how does recruiting work in Canada? So you have an opportunity to get drafted by like the WHL and the place where you're at. You don't get drafted, so you play junior, and then colleges just come up scouting kids up there.
Yeah. Well, you know, I had I had a really good season. So the Red Deer Midget AAA program is just an absolute wagon. Like, they're so sick again this year, too. And there's tournaments in Canada. There's the MAC Midget Tournament, which is a huge deal around Christmas time. And then, so my head coach, I actually made the Camrose Kodiaks in junior A as a 16-year-old, but there was a coach taking over in Red Deer named Doug Quinn. And he, you know, I can't say enough about Dougie. So my first year in Red Deer, we won provincials and we won the Pacific Qualifier. So we got to go to the national tournament. There's some serious exposure there to college scouts. And so that's where, like, I actually played in front of Marco Siki for the first time, where he was going to take over the Ohio State program. And so that was my ticket. I mean, Dougie's gone on to win 5 more provincial titles in a row after that year. And, you know, they're looking to be another powerhouse again this year. So it's certainly, I mean, it's such a combination. I know people talk about this all the time, but you got to be lucky and you got to surround yourself with good people. It certainly is not going to hurt to, like, play for a really good team. So I played in front of Marco Siki in that national tournament, and communication began thereafter. And I ended up signing, my letter of intent with Ohio State before I had even played junior hockey.
Now, are you done with junior the second you sign that intent, or it's the other way around? If you were to play one game of junior, you cannot play collegiate hockey. That's right?
Yeah, that's correct. So Trent Sutter with the Red Deer Rebels was also trying to get me to come play for the Rebels.
Okay.
And, I had to have a hard conversation with him. He was telling me, you know, he's promising me the world. And that was a tough thing for me because I grew up watching the Red Deer Rebels play.
Yeah.
It's kind of, you know, a dream of mine to play in the WHL, but I had focused my attention elsewhere after I got passed up in the draft. And I had a really, really good relationship with Boris in Camrose, the junior A club that I was intending on playing for. And then obviously the idea of being able to play college hockey, I just I thought it would be the best decision for me to go that route. So it's so interesting. I mean, it's different for every player, and I know a lot of parents, they don't know which way to send their kid. There's a lot of bad advice out there, but it just really, you got to go case by case. But for the most part, I mean, I haven't met a whole lot of guys that regretted going to college, but I'm really happy I did.
Now, what was the deciding factor? Did you go visit a few schools here in the States, or did you just see some of maybe buddies you had that had gone through the junior program? And I know it's difficult for a lot of American fans to fathom it because they don't know how the junior system works. I mean, I'm still learning it myself, going, okay, so you can't go, then go to college. But if you go to college, you could go to junior still, or... And it seems like you just kind of have to make the decision on where you're going to get the playing time and who's going to see you and what style you play, really. Like, if you're like your buddy from, you know, Camrose, who, you know, ended up playing in the Dub, it's like, he has no place in American college hockey because he can't do what he does best.
Right. So I went down to Ohio State on a visit, and it was an easy sell for me. I got there. I had touched base with Mark once earlier in the summer, and then I spent a lot of time with Coach Rolick while I was there in Columbus, and a few of the seniors taking me around. I ended up going to a Buckeye football game, sitting on a 50-yard line, and it was unlike anything I had been a part of, and I had given my verbal confirmation or the verbal commitment the next morning after that. And I didn't really even waste any time. I had some advice from my coach who's like, if you feel comfortable you know, where you're at, and he trusted the coaching staff. He had worked with Rolick a lot, even Osiki a little bit, and it was like, if this is what you want to do, like, don't, you know, let's get this out of the way, and then all you get to focus on is having a big year here in Camrose and get to work for the team, and you know, that you're on. So that was the play for me, and you know, I'm happy I did that.
Absolutely. Shit, the best way to probably get recruits to Ohio State is probably get send those tickets to the football games, man. That's like a different world, an Ohio State football game.
It's pretty wild. I mean, obviously been to a few more games, and then just had the big Michigan versus Ohio State game this last weekend. It's super cool. I met a couple of football players while I was there, and you know, good friends of mine now still that they live an interesting life being a Buckeye football player. That's for sure.
Yeah. I always say the Ohio State football players, it's not really a student athlete. They're just kind of working their way to the NFL. I live here in Ohio. I'm not a big Buckeye football guy, but I've always liked the hockey team. We used to go down and watch Umberger and Steckel play in the early 2000s. And they're really solidified, you know, like me loving hockey as much as I do is seeing those guys play. And because Ohio State hockey really wasn't much to speak for until those guys were there. I mean, Umberger getting an All-American and then making the tournament, I think his final year there, it was like, oh, shit, these guys are great, man. And so you get there, you get drafted before your freshman year at Columbus, right?
Yeah, that's correct. I got drafted by the Chicago Blackhawks after my first year as junior. And I played 2 years of junior, so it's been two summers before my first summer in Columbus playing college hockey. So I had a little bit of experience, kind of like with the Blackhawks, going to some development camps before I'd even showed up and played for Ohio State. Yeah.
Now that's got to give you a heads up over some of the guys getting in there your freshman year that you had, you know, worked out with NHL caliber players at that point.
Yeah, it certainly did. You know, and the one thing that I did regret a little bit was I think I went into Ohio State kind of like with blinders on a little bit. I was just so focused on living out my dream as a professional hockey player that for the first couple of years at Ohio State, I didn't really take in the full college experience. And instead of just really focusing in on everything I had to do to like be the best Buckeye, I was looking ahead a little bit too much, and you know, it's a hard lesson to learn, but I'm glad I learned it when I did. That you just kind of got to stay in the moment, and the more that you help the team that you're with, the more desirable it's going to make you for the other teams in the future. With all that being said, we had some really, really good squads at Ohio State, and you know, awesome teammates. That not like I thought I was cheating on the program at all or anything, but I certainly wish I would have just been fully present all the time while I was there.
Yeah, it's probably hard to do. I mean, being a kid and all that stuff, and. You went to, including yourself, some of my favorite Buckeyes ever that played hockey there with, big, huge fan of Josh Healy, man. He was a bad mother when he was there, just crushing dudes, and, played with Ryan Dzingel and Kevin Miller. Okay, Biscuit Babies, we're into a little bit of technical difficulties, so you'll now be hearing the second part of the Sam Jardin interview. Enjoy. Part two of the never-ending saga of Sam Jardin. How you doing, Sammy? We're back for round two. Let's get this bitch done.
Seriously, man. Just so typical. So typical. Trying to work with a hockey player on a technology station.
Hey, we're lucky that I'm able to even press record on this thing, man. To be honest with you, I'm almost 75% caveman, so we're good, man.
Someone help us.
Well, speaking of caveman, where we left off was talking about Healy and Miller and some of them guys you played with and Columbus. And, you know, I just wanted to talk about Healy and how he was crushing dudes there and, you know, your relationship with Ryan DeSingle. And, you know, I think Miller joined the last year you played in Ohio State, I think.
I think I played 2 years with Mills.
Okay.
Heels is an interesting one. I mean, there's so many of my teammates that I call one of a kind. But yeah, Heels is definitely one of them.
He's got to be.
Yeah, he is. I mean, obviously his on ice, like the guy, he crushes guys. He lights people up. Not afraid to throw a highlight reel together and throw it on Instagram for all the people. Like, you know, you just don't see that a lot of the times. Like, imagine some college hockey kid like putting his highlight reel from all his goals up on Instagram. So, like, he's a funny guy, big personality, yeah, a little bit forward, you know, with that stuff. And
is he out there in Calgary now?
Yeah, he's in Stockton with the Calgary Flames organization, and I've chatted with him a few times this year, and he's right in the thick of things there in Calgary's organization. It's such a grind,
yeah.
Being that next guy called up, and it's only his second year pro, and trying to make some forward progress. So sophomore year, I guess, but yeah.
Do you guys see the West Coast teams a lot, you being on the East Coast in the AHL?
Like, hardly ever.
I figured they probably keep it pretty close just, you know, for money's sake.
And definitely not those California teams. Like, I think the only team that will play is the Manitoba Moose.
Okay.
I could be wrong on that. But, yeah, no, hardly any crossover at all.
Yeah, that seems only, you know, for monetary reasons, it would be almost impossible to be sending guys from, you know, Lowell, Massachusetts out to play the Barracudas or some shit.
Right, exactly. Especially, you know, minor league budget and whatnot.
And you would work out with Ryan DeSingle, right? You guys were from around the same area in Alberta? He's an American guy, isn't he?
I first met him, obviously, playing at Ohio State. And we became really close, and then, you know, he was born and raised in Chicago.
Right.
I was the Chicago Blackhawks draft pick and living there in the summer, so I would actually crash at his place, with, you know, right there in his parents' basement, and we work really well together. We push each other really hard, and we have a lot of fun doing it. So for that reason, we always, you know, we get together in the summers, and that's always for me. That's the stuff that I just have so much fun with the game. I mean, we both love the off season, and not just because it's summertime in your way, but also because we can really focus in on the stuff that we really want to get better at, and then we attack it. And every year, Ryan and I have always, you know, done really well in training camps and stuff. And, I credit him for that a lot. So,
yeah, I saw the post on your Instagram where you're like, I'm glad Ryan left his shirt on for this post. I thought that was pretty.
Yeah, no, somebody's got to keep him humble, you know.
Now, do you think, you know, 13 years from now or whatever it is, when you hang up the skates, you'll look back on that kind of time more fondly than, you know, your first goal or your first assist in the NHL or the AHL, whether it be, you know, one of those. I think those are the moments when you talk to retired guys that go, oh, I mean, I missed the off-season workout or just being in the room with the boys. I know you had said, you know, being at Ohio State, you might have missed some of those memories. Are you trying to hold on to those a little more now as you're going, you know, grinding through your career?
100%. And I learned it from the best. And I learned it from guys that were nearing the ends of their careers. And actually, you know, like, I was my first year pro, like, I was just so focused on like, being good at hockey and playing and stuff, and interesting, it's such a grind that, like, I ended up burning out and was, you know, legitimately depressed. And but no, it's that's like it's interesting. I'm here in Toronto now,
mm-hmm.
and my role on the team is I know that I gotta come and keep things loose. I know that I need to, you know, get guys together to keep things energized and fun. You know, that's a lot of where my value comes from. And if I see any of the kind of the young guys that might be a little bit mopey or, you know, falling victim to the ups and downs of a long season, you know, that'd be the first guy that I go throw an arm around and say, hey, let's, you know, let's go do something fun this afternoon or whatever. So that's, I mean, in a nutshell, I mean, that's kind of what it's all about for me.
Is it hard, you know, with the limited ice time that you're given, to know that you have to make the best of it when you're out there? Or is it just, you know, I'm getting to play professional hockey. I'm just going to play professional hockey.
Yeah. I mean, I kind of just, I go about it in a nothing to lose, you know, scenario.
Right.
I mean, what's the worst that they can do to me? Send me to the East Coast Hockey League. Like, I've been there and I loved it. You know? So if I play poorly or I fall out of favor with a coaching staff, they send me to the coast and I go down the coast and I have the time of my life down there.
Absolutely, man.
You know, like it's, I think any time that you're waking up going to play pro hockey, it's such a win-win that it's like, all right, you go ahead, send me wherever you want. I'm still going to be the same old Sam, and I'm going to try and kick ass along the way. So
now, do those AHL and ECHL contracts work just like the two way for the NHL? Like, they can send you, bring you down, up, just that easy, or is it a little more complicated than that?
It's a little more complicated. I think in my situation, just because I signed with Orlando 2 summers ago, even though St. John's is the Marlies ECHL affiliate,
mm-hmm.
if the Marlies wanted to send me down, my rights are still with Orlando.
Okay.
So, you know, there wouldn't be a whole lot of benefit, you know, or just to them as a whole entire organization. You know, if they sent me to Orlando, they would technically be helping out, like, Tampa Bay's organization.
Right,
so,
right.
Yeah.
Yeah, that whole – yeah, because you were with Colorado, and then when Colorado was with San Antonio?
Yes.
Okay, so then you go to Orlando, and then you get picked up by the Marlies.
Yeah, so –
because that whole is, like, screwy, I mean, right there.
What's that? Sorry,
I said your timeline gets real screwy for me right there.
Yeah, it's it's like, how much time do you got? Because, it's so interesting. I got a really good agent, and he represents, you know, some big time NHL players. But he always loves, you know, he's got a lot of time for me just because I got such a unique situation. Every offseason, it's exciting to see where I'm going to land and who I'm going to talk to. And to be honest, I call these GMs and I talk to them myself. It's always been a strategy of mine. And in that summer, I was a day away from re-signing with the Colorado Eagles. We had won a championship in the ECHL.
2017 Kelly Cup champs, baby.
Yeah, exactly. No big deal. that was I would have been more than happy to go back to Colorado. It's just an unbelievable place to play. Best fans in the league. And
they're in the AHL, right?
What's that? Sorry?
Now they're in the AHL, aren't they?
Yeah, exactly. And then there was always the rumors that they might turn into an AHL team too. So, you know, there was a lot of reason for me to want to go back to Colorado. A great relationship with Aaron Schneekloth there, the head coach, and Ryan Tobler. But I ended up having a phone call with Kyle Dubas. You know, I'm driving with my dad to a family reunion, and I, you know, get this call from Dubas. I figure I should probably pull over to the side of the road, and we ended up chatting for about an hour. And, you know, the funny thing is, I've said this to a couple of people. It's like, if I could talk my way into the NHL, I'd probably.
You there?
And he offered for me to come to Toronto a month early and train with their development staff and sign an ECHL contract. I mean, obviously I was, you know, hoping for a little bit more because I'd been on American League contracts through the first 2 years of my career. But right. I took him up on the offer and came to Toronto early, started working with the staff and got in the good books of a few important people here, and they ended up offering me an American League deal, and you know, I'm still kicking in this organization, so thankful for that.
For sure. So you're with the Solar Bears, and they end up playing Colorado for the last ECHL championship?
No, we lost out in the second round. It was the Florida Everblades.
Okay, it was Everblades, right.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
You end up joining Toronto after that playoff run or before that?
Exactly. No, so we lost out, and then me and two other of my Orlando teammates got called up to Toronto, and we joined them on their Calder Cup playoff run, and we were black acing and big moral support for the guys, and you know, same thing, just trying to keep everybody loose. And I don't think it's any surprise that we were picked. You know, we were kind of character guys with good personalities, and we had a lot of fun on that run. So it's back to back championships for me.
Now, did I see? I saw a picture of you with the Calder, though, right?
Oh yeah, yeah. Our ring ceremony is coming up in a couple of days here. I'm getting a ring for it. I mean, listen,
my fucking man, you're my man.
I don't have a lot to do with it, but I do have some good stories from those runs. Regardless, and you can't take that from me.
So, boom, 2017 Kelly Cup champ, and then boom, 2018 AHL Calder Cup champ, dude.
Yeah, so we're probably gonna have to call up Dubas this year, and when the Leafs go on their NHL playoff run, I'll be like, hey,
you need some black aces again, dude.
If you're looking for the lucky black ace, I know a guy
for sure, man. It seems like any team would be calling anybody. Just get Jardine on the phone, dude. We're guaranteed to win. Just him, him being around is going to be good.
Well, I tell you what, like it's not an easy thing to do to like go to the rink every morning a little earlier than the regular team. You know, you crush a workout, you bust your ass for 45 minutes to an hour on the ice, and the whole time, your situation, I guess, is kind of like hopeless. And
yeah,
your other buddies that are playing hockey, like they've already started their summers, so they're like on cloud nine. You know, they're going on vacations and seeing their family, and you're like dragging your ass to the rink again. And you're not even playing. So it's not exactly the easiest, job to be happy and energized and excited about. But, I mean, I just keep going with the same idea that it's like you get to jump on the ice. And I hear it from my buddies that don't play anymore. And I hear it from my older brother who, you know, he couldn't play pro, but now he's into coaching. It's like, it's such a treat.
Yeah,
that you get to do that, whether you know it or not, because you're in the moment and it's not as easy. But
now, were you dressed for the final?
No. It's a funny story though. I almost played in Game 7.
No shit.
Yeah, Travis Dermott couldn't go. He barely made. He dressed for Game 6, but he didn't make it through the whole game. And the closest I came to playing was Game 7 of the Calder Cup Finals. You know, I had a conversation with Kiefer, our coach, asking if I was good to go and ready. And
fucking A-right,
I am. I did my best to make it sound like I was good to go, but yeah, he ended up going with Andrew Nielsen, and he actually had a hell of a game, I remember. And we cleaned him up in game seven. So
yeah, for sure. That yeah. series ended up being quite a treat for hockey fans. You know, they don't play a shit ton of AHL games on TV, but that series, at least down here in the States, the NHL Network did a good job of at least trying to play most of them. So it was really nice to see. I remember, I mean, I'm a Cleveland Monsters fan, so the year they won, I think I got to see like two periods of it on TV or something like that. They're just like, oh, we're going to play two periods of the game today, and they just shut it off. I'm like, oh my God, what's yeah. happening, man?
Well, it's good hockey.
It really is.
It's anytime that you get, you know, professionals at that peak and playing for a championship, like it's just really fun to see. Like, it brings out the absolute best in someone, and it's cool. Like, I had a front row ticket to to some unbelievable performances, and, you know, being, and the other thing too is you're in the meetings, in the scheming that's done from the coaching staff's perspective, like all that stuff. I just did my very best to soak it all in, and I don't think it went unnoticed. And it's part of the reason that I'm back here again this year.
So. Absolutely, man. See, I mean, you get, you know, another extension, so obviously you're doing something right, you know, in the organization, or they wouldn't be extending you, you know, through another year. And is that something you enjoy, sitting in the room watching film and, you know, just absorbing it, or is it just like you kind of have to?
No. I honestly do enjoy it. Like I said, my older brother is he's only 27 years old. He's the head coach and general manager of the Kindersley Clippers in the Saskatchewan Junior Hockey League, and you know, my dad coached him and I growing up. My dad, he'll, you know, for him, it doesn't so much matter the sport. He'll coach my sister's volleyball. He'll coach his, you know, school team's basketball. It doesn't matter. So, you know, I kind of think I got that in my blood a little bit. And, you know, just in general, I love to learn and gather different perspectives. And, you know, our coaches and coaches everywhere, they pour over video and, you know, strategizing and whatnot. So it would just be disrespectful not to at least kind of, you know, pay attention and pick their brains a little bit that way.
Oh, for sure. I was, I absolutely hated film day. I'll be honest.
Fair enough.
But I'm not a professional athlete. So, I mean, that's the difference there. I was like, oh God, I can't care less about this.
Yeah, fair enough.
Now I wanted to go back, just to the Ohio State days there, and I know that you had said there was about 12 Canadians there, basically running, you know, instead of a little Chinatown, basically a little Canada town in there.
Yeah,
is that common? Do you think in America colleges that to have that many Canadians?
No, I don't think so. I mean, I would need a little bit more insight.
I didn't think so either, though. I was surprised to read that number.
Yeah, I mean, we had it at one point right on the corner of 20th Ave and Summit Street. We had an apartment with, I think, six or seven different Canadian guys. And, yeah, it was, suffice to say, like, if you ever wanted to make sure you're going to have a good night, all you had to do is stop over at our apartment, because there's definitely something going on that night.
Dude, I probably saw you guys some nights. We used to play on Summit Street all the time. My heavy metal band I'm in, down at what was it called? There was the Summit there, and then Ruby Tuesdays.
Yeah, it's right down the street is Ruby Tuesdays.
And dude, we used to play there all the time.
Fourth Street Bar and Grill.
Yeah, man. Dude, yeah. I probably bumped into you and didn't even fucking know it.
I wouldn't doubt it for a second. We frequented there. It was like a 1 minute walk from our apartment. So.
Dude, that's wild, man. Yeah. So when you're getting invited to development camp, sorry to backtrack a little bit, but is it a conscious effort in your head to kind of show them that, you know, you will drop if they need somebody to drop. I know it's a, you know, a thing that necessarily isn't the best thing to do, but it's also, it's kind of like that 50-50 job right now, you know, that with Tom Wilson the way he is and guys like Ryan Reeves, it's almost, man, if you can put him in from the D and drop him, it's like, oh, dude, you're kind of a one-of-a-kind guy now.
Yeah, I mean, there wasn't a whole, I kind of just looked up and down Chicago's system, and I did, you know, it was very intentional that they were drafting for skill and for puck moving and whatnot. Yeah. And but I did notice that there wasn't a whole lot of defensemen playing with that kind of edge. And, yeah, so, I mean, it's kind of bizarre looking back on it now. And I went to 5 development camps with Chicago because I was so young. I was 17 years old when they drafted me.
Right.
And, yeah, so I went to a bunch and I ended up scrapping, I think, was it 3 or 4 years? 3 out of my 4 last years in a row. And 2 of them were against, like, my good friend, who was also drafted, John Hayden.
I've seen the Hayden fights online there, and it was like...
Yeah, so, and actually, Hayden's, it's a funny story, like, he went viral last year because he got in a fight, and there was, like, that slow-mo...
Oh, he fucked that dude up.
Drags his fist from the ice and cracks this guy with, like, the perfect camera angle, and he was going crazy on Instagram, so I texted him and just like, hey buddy, like, thanks for not doing that to me when
we yeah, tell him I picked him in my fantasy league because we count pims, and then he stopped fighting. I was like, oh geez, you're killing me now.
I know I think just things have you know, they changed a little bit. Like, I don't know if GMs look at your PIMS column and think, oh, he's got 100 PIMS, like, let's sign him. I think they it's like changing a little bit. Yeah. Now it's like, this guy's got 100 PIMS, he might be a liability.
Yeah. Did you ever have any coaches or GMs tell you one way or the other, all right, Sam, you have to go out there and fight?
You know what, act, I had one coach in the ECHL who had, he had 4 numbers on the board, and our captain was one of the toughest guys in the league, and he had fought the night before, and he goes, I don't want, you know, our captain fighting. If your number's on this board, you answer the bell. And mine was up there, and I did not like that, not one day. And I never fought again, like, for him. And, but I did have Teddy Dent in Rockford actually pull me over after Chicago Blackhawks training camp. And I had fought Brandon Machinter, who was way out of my weight class. And then another guy kind of goaded me into something. I just, like, it's hard for me to say no. Like, it just, you know.
And, oh, yeah,
and
for sure.
So Teddy pulls me aside. He was like, Sammy, like, we get it, you know, like, you don't have to do this. You're like, you're a fantastic hockey player, and you don't have to do this all the time. And you know, I respected that a lot. It made me feel pretty good. So,
well, I think that's the one thing I noticed about most of your fights. It seemed like you were just pretty pissed off when they came off. Like, there was no turning around about it. It was fight time.
Yeah. Well, actually, I mean, I'm trying to think of a time. There's only one time that I have ever actually started the fight.
Development camp?
Yeah. And I ended up getting fined for it. Got my coach fined, got my team fined because it was an instigator in the last 5 minutes. And the ironic thing of the whole situation was I thought I was getting called out for being soft, but our coach didn't name any names, and he was actually referring to a different teammate of mine, and it cost us all about $1,000.
Now, there is I will say a few things about watching you fight that I absolutely love. I always love that your helmet somehow finds a way off your head. It's like magic. It's like, boom, Sam's helmet's off, it's fight time. It just, like, flies off you. And I absolutely love, and you don't see this those refs will get in between you, and you're not stopping, dude. You're going to have to physically peel you off. And I don't give a shit if people think Josh Clark shouldn't have fought you or not. You worked him over. That's what happens when you fight a guy that's better than you. Sometimes you lose. And the people, you read these the fight reviews, you know, that people leave. They're like, well, Josh Clark shouldn't have fought. Well, he did, and he got his ass beat. But I love the end of that fight. I'm like, oh, dude, he went down, and he just kept going. And I respect that, man. If you get to a point where you're fighting, it should be that way. You should have to be peeled off, man. I love that fight style that you have.
I mean, it takes you into a different zone.
Yeah, you got to almost black out, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you have to. And I do remember one time I was fighting Zach Bell. And I just, like, it was my, like, when your heart's not in it, it's such a weird thing. But, like, my heart wasn't in that one. And he ended up, you know, hitting me two or three times. And it's, like, the only time that I actually ever felt the punch.
Oof.
And, you know, like, because I couldn't get into like that, into that state of mind where you got to beat it to actually do well in the fight. And, you know, that was, I guess a learning experience for sure.
Well, that's, not to equate it to street fighting, but I mean, back at the bus stop when I was a kid, someone was picking on my brother, my baby brother. You know, I had to do something about it because the guy was bigger than him, but my heart wasn't in it either. But I grabbed the guy and I hit him a couple times. I'm just like, what am I doing? I'm like, sorry, bud, just stop. Leave him alone. I was like, what's going on here? I felt kind of like a dick after I hit him a few times. I was like, okay, is everybody cool? Like, it's weird when your heart isn't into that. It is. It makes you almost appreciate those guys a little bit more, but like, because some of them would do it at certain points in the game just for entertainment's sake. Like, that's just pure gladiator.
Yeah, and like, man, I listened to your episode with George LaRocque.
How good was that, man?
Yeah, it's awesome. But listening to him say, like, how genuinely he didn't like it.
Right.
Like, I just don't know. I don't know how he, like, pulled himself out of bed. I don't care if he was making $1.5, $2 million a year to do it.
13 years.
It's insane. He's like, well, I guess if I'm going to do it, then I better be the best. Like,
I think his least favorite thing to do in the world is fight, and he did it for a living.
It's crazy.
It's insane. And you go back to that coach, you know, asking you to do that, and, you know, you're really getting a bad taste in your mouth. I've had Scott Parker on before, and he's, you know, been in tussles with coaches before, being like, you know, you're asking me to risk my life and you guys are just shitting on me any other time unless I'm out there fighting the guy. Like, what's the deal here? It's a hard relationship between a coach and that position. And that is definitely something that needed changing.
Yeah. I've seen that. I've seen that a couple of times where, If the coach if the coach loses the tough guy in his locker room, then it's like the first sign of the coach losing the entire locker room.
Wow.
It's like if you're a coach, you gotta have your tough guy in your corner, because a lot of the times, you know, that's one of the most respected, if not the most respected guy. And as soon as he doesn't want to fight for you anymore, oh boy, you could be in trouble.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. And it's kind of that thing where you don't really have to ask those guys to do it. So when you start asking them to do it, it almost seems like an odd proposition.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. They know.
Yeah. Doug Smith was on and he said the same thing. He's like, I was never asked one time. You didn't need to ask me. I knew what I was on that bench for. And I was coming off to do it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Sam, sure. how did you enjoy, how are you enjoying this journey into, you know, what I hope the NHL, is it hard to slow down and realize how great it is to be a professional athlete sometimes? Or do you have a pretty good grasp on it from having a dad who coached or, you know, having a brother now who coaches where you're like, I'm very fortunate to be playing professional hockey?
Yeah. Man, it's there's highs, there's lows, there's
because it really is a grind.
It is such a grind.
I think people take for granted, you know, professional athletes such as yourself, where you go, oh, these guys are just getting paid millions upon squillions. But no, there's plenty of guys working their ass off to make a living.
Oh yeah, and it's. It's not anywhere near as glamorous as anybody thinks it is. And I don't need to sit here and list off all the sacrifices of, you know, family time and incapable of being like in quality relationships, stuff like that. It has been and still is, my dream.
Right.
And with that being said, I do actually recognize fully like the other parts of life that have suffered because of me, you know, living in 8 different cities in the last 5 years.
You've been moving, man. You've been moving.
There's a lot of things that I want to do with my life that hockey actually prevents me from doing. But with that being said, it's always, you know, it's a constant pros versus cons. And for me, the pros still far outweigh the cons. And, it's so neat. Just like every year I meet just another group of characters. And that's like, we talked about it earlier. That's one of the biggest things for me is the relationships that you meet along the way. Like last year in Orlando, I met a guy, Kyle Rankin, that he'll be one of my best friends for the rest of my life. And meeting a couple of those guys again this year, and who knows the years down the road. Like, so I don't think you can put a
absolutely not. You can't put a price on that, man. And it's you know, and I'm not much older than you. I'm 31, and I think about like touring across America with Artillery Breath and doing all these things. And I didn't enjoy it when I was doing it, and I was like, "Oh man, I could have, you know, left the bus one day or you know something like that. Like it maybe enjoyed it a little bit more." So I'm very happy to hear that you're aware enough of your situation that you're enjoying it, man. That puts a smile on my face and You talk about meeting, you know, guys and all this, and I'd be remiss if I didn't ask you if you've met Mr. Babcock.
Oh yeah, absolutely, I have. I've been through two NHL training camps with him, I got a lot of respect for, you know, his professionalism, and I've had a couple conversations with him. It was interesting. It was probably only 10, 15 seconds long. Where he goes, Jardine. Oh yeah, yeah. He goes, still kicking. I took a look at the teams you played for the other day. I go, yeah. It's first time back with a team for 2 years in a row, actually, Babs. And he goes, well, you know, keep going. It's been a hell of a career.
Hell yeah. That's pretty awesome.
You know, it's nice. It's nice to get that respect, because there's, you know, guys in this league, and you know, it's mostly going to come from players where they'll be like, holy Jard's the suitcase. So thankful for, somebody kind of taking notice that I've had to grind, and certainly haven't done things with any kind of glamour, and more so a lot more guts. So
yeah, 93 PIMs in Orlando, bud. That's what I would have said.
Yes,
you say, put that in the fucking mail, dude. Yeah. No, I Babcock's a winner, man. He's doing very well in Toronto. My wife is from Flint, so she's a diehard Wings fan, and So you can't really bring him up in my house. So she'll listen to this episode and she'll be pissed that I said I like him. But he's okay in my book.
Yeah, for sure,
man. And now, does it feel? I'm trying to find the correct word here. Are you optimistic about being in an organization that needs defensemen?
Yes.
I know it's a heavy question.
I think, here's what I think, and I'll be 100% truthful. I think that narrative of an organization that needs defensemen is maybe a little bit overplayed.
Okay.
Jake Gardner sometimes takes heat in the Toronto media, and that's exactly what it is. It's just that Toronto media bubble.
Yeah.
And I watch Jake Gardner and I'm like, this guy's unbelievable.
Oh, he's a freak.
He's a freak. And haven't even touched on Morgan Riley, who's, going to be a Norris candidate this year.
You got to give it to him.
It's crazy. Yeah. And then you have, so these are all left shot defensemen, which I am. And then you got Travis Dermott, who I saw firsthand last year with the Marlies and what he's capable of doing. He's getting better every game.
Another teammate of yours from last year who I think is a stud is Liljegren.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. I mean, he's just knocking on the door right now. Obviously every team wants to have the unbelievable decor. There's no doubt. But I don't see it as a huge weakness. In fact,
all right, aren't they?
Yeah, I like Toronto's decor. I've seen firsthand the way that those guys act and the pride that they take. And I would love nothing more than to see the Leafs win a Stanley Cup with the 8 defensemen they have right now.
Well, I'd like 7 of them. I'd like to replace one of them with Sam Jardine, that's for sure. I'm glad you say that, man. I'm glad you stand on that point, making me feel like a douche, but it is sports media, dude, and I buy into that shit too. I mean, I'm in the so-called business of it, it is just maybe that narrative because they are winning games, so how bad is their defense? You know what I mean?
Well, yeah, exactly. And they got a guy like Justin Hall has only played 2 games for him this year. And in my opinion, if it wasn't for Garrett Sparks being unbelievable in goal last year, this guy could have easily been the Calder Cup MVP just because of the quality 25, 26 minutes that he put in every night. He was an absolute stud. And he is he's a consistent, healthy scratch. This guy would be in the top 6 of just about any NHL team right now. So,
well, I'm glad you bring up Sparks because back to that Calder Cup of last year, those 2 goalies were both just phenomenal. They might as well just played against each other. I mean, it was crazy how good both of them were from both teams, the Marlies and the Stars. They're not the Stars. What are they?
It's Texas Stars. Yeah.
Okay, Texas Stars. I was going to say, yeah, yeah. I was like, I mean, both those guys were killing it, man.
Yeah, I mean, it's still the oldest secret in hockey is take a look at a championship team and you're probably going to find a really, really good goalie, so.
Yeah, built from the goalie out, is what they always said.
Yeah.
Unless you read Twitter.
Fair enough.
Well, yeah. Sam, this has been an absolute treat for me, man. And, we've talked a lot of hockey. What do you like music or movie-wise?
Oh, man, I'm actually quite an art nerd.
Okay, now I'm getting excited.
Yeah, a little bit, actually.
Not like paintings, are you, right?
What's that, sorry?
Are you into Chuck Close, surrealism, or,
No, like,
okay, good.
I just like film and music, like indie, like that's part of the reason that I love, living in Toronto. This place is just a mecca for
it's vibrant,
like kind of an undercover, music and film scene. I remember seeing the trailer for Bohemian Rhapsody with, one of my teammates last year. It was like 7 months before the movie was even set to come out. And I was like, that's going to be an unbelievable movie, which it was.
Did you see it?
I did.
It was good?
So good. So good. And then the other one lately was, A Star is Born. No shame saying that, you know, that's one of my favorite movies of all time now.
Biscuit babies know everywhere. If you talk shit about Lady Gaga, I will fist fight you anywhere you want. I do not care. I love Lady Gaga. Did I lose you?
Yeah. Sorry, I'm back. I don't know what happened there.
Oh, no. What I was saying is I said Biscuit babies know everywhere that, if you talk trash about Lady Gaga, I will fist fight you anywhere you want.
Oh, seriously? Yeah, that's not a Twitter fight that I want to be getting into is with Gaga fans.
Oh, man. I mean, she's the best. She's absolutely the best.
Yeah. So I was really into that movie. I watched a couple of, Bradley Cooper interviews and, like, you know, what he did to direct that movie. So,
Did you think of Dice in that movie? Dice Clay.
Who, Dice Clay? Help me out here.
She plays Lady Gaga's dad. He does.
Oh, yeah, okay. Yeah, no, he's good. The guy that, he owns the limousine business.
I didn't see the fucking movie. I just know that he's in it. He's an old, famous comedian.
No, he does a good job. He's got a lot of tongue-in-cheek sort of stuff where he's pushing his daughter to, you know, who's Lady Gaga to kind of...
Does she die?
I'm not going to tell you
spoiler
that.
Spoiler alert. Sam, does she die?
I refuse to tell you that. You got to go out and watch it yourself.
What does she die from? Cancer? Cocaine.
Vocal cord surgery.
And it kills her?
Man, I'm screwing with you.
Oh my god, dude. She dies from vocal cord surgery.
That is
brutal. Somebody dies in that fucking movie. I know they do.
Yeah, 100%.
It's been made like 4 times.
Mm-hmm.
And I've yet to see any of them. I probably won't see this one either. I've got 4 kids, dude. I watch Moana, We're gonna try to watch Making Coco tonight, but it's on TSN and not in America.
Oh yeah.
And then did you see the trailer for Tough Guy today, the Bob Probert story?
You know what? I have it in a link ready to go. When I was waiting for your call, I saw a couple articles and that I haven't seen it yet, but I'll probably watch it as soon as this interview is over.
Another spoiler alert, Gordy Day, the producer of that, will be on the show Friday. So get ready for that, Biscuit Babies. And oh my God, Bob Probert.
See, this is the stuff, like when you ask about my interest outside of hockey, I would have loved to have been a part of like that documentary filmmaking stuff.
That's what you got to do after you're done.
Yeah. And like, so the human condition has always, torn at me a little bit. I got a soft spot for all that stuff a little bit. And I like to kind of expose it for what it is and how everybody deals with it and the different ways. And so the fact that somebody, you know, did the research, got the footage and the content and got the family on board with all that. Like,
biggest part. They got Danny on board with it. And, she's been on the show before, Mrs. Probert, if you got her thumbs up, you got my thumbs up.
Right. I mean, and it an unbelievable book. Like, what was it? Like, how many years ago was that book written?
A few years before he passed away. I mean, maybe not even. And that book is bigger than the Bible in my house. That thing is...
Yeah.
It's
change my life.
Exactly,
and
Sam.
The Jordan 2-2 book did as well.
Doug Smith's book is incredible.
Yeah.
Val James. Yeah, dude, there's some good hockey books.
Yeah, and I'm not to put like hockey players on a pedestal, because I'll be the first guy to say that we're just common folks, and you'd be shocked how the percentage of guys that they have their struggles, and they sometimes just lunch pail their way through things. But there's just the neatest stories in the hockey world of guys and how big their hearts are. And I
think as far as sports go, you guys, professional hockey players, still retain an amount of humanity.
Yeah.
I don't know what that difference is between baseball, basketball, and hockey and football, but they seem more they seem more like real humans.
100%. 100%. And you see it in the tragedies, unfortunately.
Yeah, maybe that's it, man. Maybe that is it.
That's where it really gets brought out, and Las Vegas last year and their tragedy, but obviously Humboldt.
Oh God.
Those were situations where the humanity of the hockey community really comes out. But yeah, I think there's so I guess to really answer your question, as I think about my life after hockey, and actually even during, I don't think I even have to wait.
To
get started on this kind of stuff, is I want to figure out how to tell this story of the humanness in the hockey community. I don't know. I have no idea how to do it yet, or how to make that something. But this is why I was kind of excited when you asked me to come on the podcast.
I was just about to say, you took your first step right here, man.
Yeah, for sure. So that's why I love what you have going on. So.
Yeah, well, if you ever need any help, dude, I'll write your book for you, dude. I'm a fucking genius.
Let's get some words on paper here.
We talked about movies. Is there any kind of tunes you get into? I know hockey players seem to have the worst taste in music, man. And it's and that's just from my opinion, because I'm into like Megadeth and all that. What gets you pumped up for a hockey game?
What gets me pumped up, man? I gotta relax. Mm. So yeah, I gotta relax. The first thing that's coming to mind right away is the Tragically Hip.
I don't even know what that is, man.
You don't know who that? Sorry?
I have no idea what that is.
Oh man, what a treat you are about to be in for. So oh yeah, Tragically Hip.
Is that the Canadian group where the dude just passed away?
Exactly.
Okay,
yeah,
I do know that guy just passed away, and it was a big deal in Canada.
Yeah. So there, there's gonna be. You can just go on Spotify or Apple Music, and probably the first 10 songs. It was Gordon Downie.
Yep, that's who it is.
His name and. And he was, he was really into hockey. He was a huge fan. He was a Maple Leafs fan. And he wrote some songs.
They wrote a song about somebody, right?
Yeah, specifically for a hockey player. Man, I wish – I'm kind of like – it's almost like disrespectful to like get the whole story wrong. But another guy with just a huge heart and fantastic lyrics. They were so involved with the community. They never really made it too big outside of Canada. And unfortunately, I never really got too into Tragically Hip until Gordon Downey got sick, which is regrettable. So I'm a little bit of a bandwagon that way.
That's fine.
But, totally. So I wasn't sure if you would know them, just because they're kind of like a cult hockey community band that might know, you might have known, but
now that you say it, I do know, because of him passing away, and I know the hockey community was very affected by that guy's passing.
Yeah, and then so for your American listeners, they could, this could be a nice little gem for them, because they never really expanded their music outside of Canada too much, but they are, they're the real deal.
Isn't that some kind of nice though, maybe, to have someone that is just Canadian?
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah.
I would think so.
A lot of country artists in Canada that don't really, get picked up in Nashville. And, it's unfortunate. Like Paul Brandt's a guy from Alberta he's like, 10, 15 unbelievable tracks if you're into.
What's his name? Is he like good country? Like,
he's like soulful country. Like, I don't even know. I'm not even sure who I would compare him to, as far as like what his voice sounds like, because he's kind of original that way. But, he sings from the heart. He's got deep, passionate lyrics.
You gotta send me a track of his.
Yeah, no, absolutely, I will. And he's another, a guy that I grew up listening to just because he was from Alberta. But just from an unbiased perspective, I think that he goes head to head with the best country artists of all time. Just the way that he. He's a deep, thoughtful family man that puts his heart into everything he does. So that's what I'm looking for in art. It's just I just like things that are genuine and human So
that's the key, man. You can tell art that is genuine, and the human element is absolutely massive. That's our. It got to a point, like playing death metal, I'm like, man, like 5 years into it, I was like, I can't write about like weird evil shit. So you guys play whatever you're going to play, and I'm just going to write about my life. Nobody knew the difference, but it felt better to me to do it that way. So like people really love our first album, but our second and third to me are better. Whether they're more popular, they're better in every aspect of that.
Mm-hmm.
And I got two more questions for you.
Yeah, for sure.
Are you ready?
Let's go, I hope.
Let's go. Yeah. Let's go, Sam Jardine, buddy. And again, I got to thank Preston Boyd, my fellow Belleville-ian. I was down at the park. Our daughters were playing, and he goes, "You know Sam Jardine, who played at Ohio State?" And I said, "Yeah, down at the Solar Bears." And he said, "You should have him on the show." And I said, "I'll try my best, buddy." So shout out to Preston for getting this hooked up, man.
Nice. Yeah, we got it.
You got fans in Belleville, Ohio, dude. That's huge.
Love that out of Preston.
What do you miss about Ohio?
Oh, goodness. What do I miss about Ohio? There's a few things. Yeah, there's a few things. I miss Buckeye Donuts.
Okay.
At very early hours of the morning, when I wasn't studying. What else do I miss about Ohio? I miss the Oval in the spring. I miss Charlie Bear. If there's any of
the Columbus kids will know.
Charlie Bear, the land of dance. we had some pretty funny memories in that place before it got shut down.
Did you like playing at the Shot?
I loved playing at the Shot.
The Shot's a pretty sick arena.
You know what?
Especially for college hockey.
It is. It's unbelievable. I think it still has the record for the most attendance in an indoor stadium.
It's got to. It's huge.
I'm certain that it does. It was a game versus Michigan, and it's like in the 19,000s, which is crazy. Ooh. It would have been unbelievable to play that. But it's interesting. Like there's a lot of things, and I go back to Columbus every summer.
Do you really?
I do. I helped start a hockey camp there.
Dude, I saw that at it's not Denison, but Otterbein.
Yeah, the kids stay over at Otterbein, but we do the on ice program right there on the Ohio State sheet. So.
Do you do how young the kids go?
It's like 9 to 17.
Well, you'll be seeing some of my kids here pretty soon, bud.
It sounds good. Yeah, no, it's.
I'll be the dad getting kicked out.
It's a fun time. We've done it for two summers in a row now, and I think it would be just unbelievable to play for the Columbus Blue Jackets. Like,
well, why don't you fucking make the team?
Somebody give John Davidson a call. Holy shit.
he hasn't answered my call for a long time, so he ain't gonna answer mine.
Seriously, yeah. And actually, like, we just had Sam Gagne here with the Marlies.
Oh God, he was a hero for.
Yeah.
Not he wasn't here long, but he was such a champion for the city when he was here.
Oh, just an unbelievable guy. Like you'd think that him getting sent down to the minors, he would be all glum and gray and whatever. He was perfect. Like the perfect teammate while he was here, but he loved it in Columbus when he was living there with his wife. And you know, I got some friends on the Blue Jackets. They were young guys like Boone Jenner and Ryan Murray.
Yeah,
they were
buddy.
Really young guys when I was at Ohio State, so I would run into them all the time. And they're both good Canadian boys, so I always, you know, saw eye to eye with them.
But if you were a forward, you'd probably be Boone Jenner.
100%.
You know what I mean?
I love this game. Yeah.
His game. It reminds me a lot of your – I mean, minus the offense and defense, I'd say your games are pretty similar.
Yeah. I mean, listen, I have always said that I should have been a forward.
Dude, I fucking think the same thing, dude. I really do. And I'm not trying to disrespect you. I think you should probably play forward.
I mean, my Uncle Dave, I remember reading a text from him. It was back when the when Ohio State, we went into the Big Ten Conference, so my Uncle Dave back home could watch every game now that we were on the Big Ten. And he's like, Sam, I don't know, like, you can take this how you want, but if you want to make it, I think you should be a centerman. And I was like, Dave, I've been telling people this since I was 14.
What did Clayton play?
He was a forward, but he's only I think he's like 5'10", 165 pounds.
He gave it hell.
Yeah. Oh yeah. He was you know, with that small frame, he became like a penalty killer and a face off man, and that's not an easy thing to do at that size.
He played 4 years of collegiate hockey. I mean, shit.
Oh yeah. Yeah. He played 4 years at Merrimack. And
where is Merrimack?
Well, he's got some stories too. What a personality my older brother has. Holy smokes.
Sam, last question.
All right.
Hey, and if you come to Ohio and you don't get a hold of me, dude, I'm going to come down and fucking fist fight you.
No, man, we got to go to 4th Street Bar and Grill where we've probably met three or four times already.
Well, dude, I'll be signing divorce papers the next day, bud. This is a question I ask, and the old school hockey fans hate it. They can lick my sack. It doesn't matter. I think this is a fun question. What is your Mount Rushmore hockey players?
Oh boy.
You know what? I'll disallow it. I'll switch it up since you're an art guy. Give me your four favorite bands.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, we'll switch it up. We'll fucking all these guys who send me tweets after the podcast comes out. Yeah, four favorite bands.
I can I mean, I could do both for you, but let's start with both.
Let's do both.
Yeah, why the hell not? Give the people what they want.
That's right, buddy.
So let's start with bands. I'll go Mumford & Sons.
Dude, that one song I really, really like.
Yeah.
I don't know much deep of that about them.
that one song, but yeah. That's the one. Who else? We'll put Tragically Hip up there, for sure. I'm going to go with Bruce Springsteen.
Get out of here, dude. Are you 60 years old?
Just for my boy Kyle Rankin. Before I even liked Bruce, he pretty much forced me to like Bruce.
We played Flint, Michigan one year on the 4th of July, and we played outside, and people were shooting fireworks at us as we were playing our set.
Yeah.
And then after we finished, Born in the USA played for the next 6 hours on repeat.
Mm-hmm.
That's my experience with Bruce Springsteen.
I would be disrespectful to try and like get into back and forth Bruce with you. Because like I'm a new fan. He's an old guy, I'm a new fan.
So what's that fourth band, bud?
And then the last one, we're gonna go with Johnny Cash.
Oh yeah, I love it.
Johnny Cash, as much as you know, the fact that you know he had solo albums, he would be the first guy to say it's not just me up here, it's the band. So
he was he's one of a kind, man. Did you bale hay as a kid?
You know what? I never did. But
sounded like a bay hailer, man.
I'd slap some pigs around.
Hey, that's all right. That's all right.
Yeah, slap some pigs around and started chewing tobacco when I was 12, but I quit when I was 14.
As you do, that's what I did too myself, man.
Yeah.
They give it to you when you're 12, you swallow it in school, and then you you quit at 14 because you're about to die.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I'm out on this shit.
Dude, I remember the first time I had to put a cow down, and I went, I am not a farmer. Like,
yeah.
This is absolutely heartbreaking.
Yeah. You know what? I've taken quite a few jokes, you know, the butt end of a joke from my Grandpa Dave. Because if you ask my Grandpa Dave, like, I'm a pretty boy.
Oh, of course.
And quite frankly, like, in comparison to my Grandpa Dave, I'm much worse than a pretty boy. He's the grittiest guy I know.
Grandpa Dave probably fought in a war and
not quite, but he knows a lot of people that did. He's still kicking. I mean, he's still running the farm at the age of like 79 years old. So.
That's what you say. You're from a small town. I live in a town of 2,000, so it's you know, I'm from a very small town. You're baling hay as soon as you can lift anything.
Yeah. No hay baling out in Alberta. We got the gold crops of wheat and canola and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah, so. Lucky SOB.
Yeah, we got the good dirt there. God's country.
My hands are still dog shit from that stuff, dude. Now the Rushmore, and I'm gonna change this up too. I don't want your favorite four hockey players. I want your favorite four enforcers.
Oh, favorite four enforcers. Okay, well, the first guy that was gonna come to mind, I think I can still put him up here because his face is just burned at the front of my brain right now, and that's Chris Pronger.
Okay.
That was the guy. That's the guy I've always tried.
That's a defenseman.
I just think he's like one of the most effective NHL hockey players of all time, as far as like toughness and skill and like leadership, all that, all the intangibles, like So that I'm putting Chris Pronger up there because he would scrap and he would beat the piss out of guys too.
Absolutely.
So, the only thing is, whoever he was fighting, you know, probably thought it's a good trade off to take Pronger in the box for 5 minutes. And I, so
I always don't think about that.
yeah, fair enough. Yeah. All right, so you got Chris Pronger. I'll put George Laroque on there.
I like that.
You know, Edmonton Oilers. I always grew up watching him. Oh boy, who else do we got?
And if you guys didn't listen to the episode with George Laroque, go back and listen to it because it is a treat.
It is a good one. He was just in Laval while we were playing the Laval Rocket too, and I really wish I would have been able to meet him. But the next one, Bob Probert.
Yep.
I think that one's a no-brainer.
No-brainer.
I got no memories of watching him. But, man, the highlights of him just going toe-to-toe is...
Well, I told my wife the same thing. She grew up watching him as a little kid because all her uncles were Red Wings nuts. And I was like, man, I lived in Ohio. We didn't know any better. And then I caught on to him when I was in high school, and I was like, oh, I fucked my whole life up. I should have been this guy. I should have been Bob Probert.
Yeah.
Because he is the best. He is the greatest of all time to ever do it.
Yeah, and just the stories of what kind of teammate he was to the rookies coming up and stuff like that too is unbelievable. So
even to the other guys coming in to fight him, like the Scott Parker, I've had him on. Scott Parker was young. He was in Chicago. He's like, dude, I don't want to fight, and he still tossed him one.
Yeah,
and knocked him out.
Hopefully, totally, yeah. And then, holy smokes, the fourth one.
Last one, bud. Better be good.
All right.
Better be good. You just said Bob Probert. I think you fucking shit on yourself a little bit.
I know. I want so badly. I'll catch some heat for this from maybe like the diehard listeners. But I can't not say my good friend and teammate of the past 2 years who retired as the active leading penalty minutes leader in all of professional hockey. His name is Daryl Bootlin.
Oh, and yeah, Bootlin's a shit.
Booter,
oh, yeah, hell yeah, man. That's a great one.
He's on my Mount Rushmore of all-time favorite teammates. This guy, the absolute creature. The stories, dude,
that's the best way to describe him, creature.
Oh, such a creature. But the greatest guy ever too, like, you know, and he's a fantastic father, and I got sent down to Colorado. I'd been playing half the season in San Antonio, and I'm in the American League, and I get sent down to Colorado, and here's Booter, my new stallmate, and just an absolute motor mouth. I'd heard the stories before I even got there, holy smokes. But anyways, he put the puck in the net too, and he got up.
Was incredible.
Yeah. Yeah. So, when he retired, he was the active penalty minutes leader in all of professional hockey. So suffice to say, this guy could give her.
Oh, the Biscuit Babies are going to be freaking out about that. They're all huge Bootlin fans. I remember when he went down to Colorado, and that's a great pick, man. That's a good Mount Rushmore, bud.
Oh man, yeah. If you could ever get Booter on this podcast, you'd be
shit.
You'd
be send him a text. Tell him to come on.
Oh yeah, for sure. I will right now.
Sam, thanks a lot for your time, man. Sorry about the technical difficulties earlier, dude. Thanks for coming back for the second part. It's been an absolute treat, bud.
You cannot apologize. Don't make your listeners think that it was your fault. That one was all on me.
I was trying to take the bullet for you, bud.
Oh man, you don't have to fall on the sword.
There he goes, the consummate teammate, dude. The consummate teammate.
I appreciate that, though. That means a lot to, that you would stick your neck out there for me like that.
Push, come to shove. I don't give a fuck about these listeners, dude. Dude, thanks again. And you got to come back on sometime, man. This was an absolute blast, dude.
You got it. I would love to anytime.
Hey, tell the Biscuit Babies where to find you online and all that if you're into that thing.
Yeah, sure. I mean, I'm not much of a presence on Twitter, but yeah, if you want to take a look into my life on Instagram, it's Samuel Jardine _.
Oh, what's that cut you had in 2012 as we're speaking of that?
Oh, shit, man.
Did you really get bit by a shark?
No.
Dude,
that happened my freshman year at Ohio State. Do you want to save it for the next episode, or you want?
Yeah,
me to,
no, let's save it, dude. Promise me you'll come back on, and we'll start there.
100%. Yeah, damn. Yeah. No, that was pretty wild times, though.
That's a fucking teaser, you idiots! Better come back for part two.
All right, sounds good.
Later. Have a good night, Sam.
You too. Thanks, William.
How many fucks do I give?